Hello, America, and welcome to the Monday edition of John Solomon Reports, a podcast from Just the News, where today we're going to spend the whole podcast talking to a congressman on the front lines in Congress, Representative Lee Zeldin of the great state of New York. He is joining us. He's been on the show before, and what we're going to talk about today is really what lies ahead for Congress. What's the dynamic going to be like when there's a Joe Biden in the White House, a 50-50 split in the Senate, and a less than 12-member difference between Republicans and Democrats in the House with Democratic leadership, but very narrow. What are the strategies? What are the challenges? What are the opportunities? What legislation might get passed? What things can Republicans do to engage and get things done? What things can they do to block things that they don't want? That's what we're going to spend the time talking to. Congressman Zeldin has been on the front lines. He has a lot of support in the Republican caucus, and he's really dialed into what Kevin McCarthy and the other leaders of the Republican House minority are doing. And so I think he'll be able to give us a really good perspective. I know many of you have asked, you know, is the world coming to an end? Are they going to be able to get statehood for Puerto Rico and D.C. and other territories? Are they going to be able to get the growth of the Supreme Court, pack the Supreme Court? Are they going to get other policies in or out? And I think getting a firsthand perspective, what I've said on television is based on my experience and also based on well over 100 interviews in the last, you know, 3 to 6 weeks. A lot of the people I'm talking to think the majorities are too slim for Joe Biden to get any of the big wish list items, or many of the big wish list items of the Democratic Party. So I'm going to be interested to hear what Congressman Zeldin has to say, what things he and the Democrats and Republicans in Congress are talking about. Also want to talk about the continued revelations about the lack of security, lack of defensive capabilities that the Capitol Hill police had when they were overrun last Wednesday in that tragic event in the Capitol, the riot, the invasion of the Capitol. It really exposed if a ragtag team of protesters could get in that easy and create a riot and create mayhem, imagine what a well-trained terrorist cell or a much larger operation could have done to the Congress. There is a lot of repercussions ahead for the security apparatus around Washington, specifically the Capitol. This exposed just how bad it was. And now the question becomes, how do we fix it? What needs to be fixed? Who are the perpetrators now? What could perpetrators get next time? Penetration testing is going to be very important. But there was a major flaw in security exposed by this horrific event. And it makes you wonder what an actor with even worse intentions and more capability than the group of thugs that ran over the Capitol last week, what they could have achieved. And so I want to talk to Congressman Zeldin about what that is, what they can do, what can be achieved, and where we go from here. So we're not going to do a monologue today. We're going to go straight to our interview with Congressman Lee Zeldin. But first, let's hear from our great sponsors, our great advertisers, the people that make this show and justthenews.com possible. We'll be right back with our exclusive interview with Congressman Lee Zeldin of the great state of New York. Folks, everyone knows the next medical crisis is just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something much more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's what we learned from this last pandemic, right? That's where the Wellness Company comes in. You know the Wellness Company. We have their great doctors like Dr. Peter McCullough on all the time on our shows. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust, and the new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy, and most importantly, prepared. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. The medical emergency kit provides a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all of these life-saving medications, so you know what you're doing. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID and even the bioweapon like the plague, the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics on hand to keep you and your family safe from whatever the globalists throw your way. Go to www.twchealth/justnews today in order. That's twc.health/justnews and use the promo code justnews to save 10%. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest, the great congressman from the state of New York, Lee Zeldin, is joining us. Congressman, welcome back to the show.
Well, it's always good to be with you, John. Thank you.
It's an honor to have you on. It's been a pretty chaotic week, I know, and exhausting week for anyone who worked on or near Capitol Hill. I just want to, we're a couple of days after it, and sometimes the fog of war clears up. What have we learned about the security state of the Capitol? How was it that a group of people was able to penetrate so quickly like they did? What things are we learning about the security and perimeter of the Capitol that we did not know before this tragic event on Wednesday?
The Sergeant-at-Arms resigned. The Capitol Police Chief resigned. In the days leading up to January 6th, there was a ramp-up of security and putting up security perimeters, and there was planning that was going on. This wasn't some random day that happened out of the blue where no one expected a heightened threat. So that excuse is gone. And clearly the planning that was done was not adequate enough. The security wasn't prepared enough. There's a lot of questions that need to get answered, but I don't see how this breach could have even been allowed to happen like this. My background's the military,
right?
Trained on setting up tactical control points, rules for use of force, rules of engagement, what resources, equipment are available to bring to certain efforts. And, in this particular case, there's a certain point where when people are coming towards the Capitol, they cross that threshold, you elevate to a different posture. There's a different alert. There might be different use of force rules that would apply. Maybe there's some manpower that would be kept in reserve that would get deployed. And you're closing and so you're securing certain entry points better to the Capitol. The communication, the Capitol could have went on lockdown a bit sooner. There's just so many different components to the analysis, including like the Air Force veteran who ends up getting killed. Why would she get shot and killed at that moment as opposed to having some other tactic available to de-escalate that particular situation? So that, that all needs to be investigated, understood, and never allowed to happen again, ever again in the history of for the future of this great country.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely one of the most important things that are going to come from this lesson. I talked to a lot of Metro Police over the last few days, and there seems to be some frustration that so many of the perpetrators were just simply allowed to walk out. They weren't put into handcuffs. They weren't arrested. So the business of now tracking them down is going to be a long, cumbersome process. Have we learned anything about the people who have been charged and arrested already and who may be charged? Any sense of whether this was an organized attack or just a spontaneously bad decision by people? Do we know anything more today about that, the planning for this, or whether it was spontaneous?
I've been asking questions myself, and quite honestly, John, I have questions that need to get answered before I can, be able to answer that one myself. But I'm asking the same exact questions on that front. Now, with the Capitol Police officer who died, that
yeah,
it becomes
so tragic.
A murder investigation. Now, and once again, even asking about the people who leave the Capitol, this all comes down to the planning that for how to respond to a situation like
right.
this. And I love our Capitol police officers. And I remember what happened on the practice field for the Republicans with the baseball team and that shooting. I mean, that was heroism. And I saw one of them, who was the hero from that incident. He's still serving. I saw him on the House floor this week. They do an amazing job. How do you not, as the overall entity and the training and the preparation not know how to respond for a contingency of a whole bunch of people storming the Capitol. And then what I would say to, you know, to answer your point about people leaving, is part of that contingency is, okay, we're going to want to regain control of the Capitol as quickly as we can. How are we going to do it? We're going to do that by getting people out of the Capitol. I get that. I get the call that would be made to get people out of the Capitol.
Right.
But getting people outside of the door doesn't mean that they're now, you know, free to go, you know, out onto the street,
street and walk away.
Figure out how
right.
to track them down. You know, so what I would say from that standpoint is you get them out of the Capitol in a, you know, you set up a pens secure area where you can conduct questioning, you can get witness statements. You don't just have everyone go out the front door, because, by the way, you're going to have people who ended up inside of the Capitol who went in there spontaneously, and I've heard them speak. I mean, I was on at the airport yesterday on my way back to New York,
right?
And I heard someone sitting close by who was inside of the Capitol, you know, talking about how, you know, he was convinced that this one cameraman who was on, you know, on this one area where he was had to have been Antifa, and he's going on and on with
right.
like, you know, incredible detail.
Yeah, right.
Well, like, what? Why wasn't that person
interviewed,
asked for information? So, and that applies to, you know, anyone who saw anything.
Yeah, there's a real concern that operationally, almost all the things that we should know. And listen, this wasn't a particularly well armed or violent in the sense of having armaments and things. If a terrorist or others had come through, they could have run through that place quickly. We could have had a really extraordinary tragedy. It's definitely got to be a learning point and an inflection point. I wanted to ask you, because you've spent a lot of time really developing what I would call the modern day policies and priorities of the conservative movement. And obviously the Trump era brought in a whole different opportunity in terms of voters and policies. And where does the conservative movement, now that it's lost the Senate, it looks like lost the presidency, where does it go to pick itself up? How does it get back on its feet? How does it begin to, you know, get right back in and compete and have its voice heard and its policies enacted?
Instantly, there's going to be a ton of clarity on this because of the policy agenda of the other side. We'll see it in executive orders that will come out of the new administration instantly. You'll see it out of the confirmation process and debate, and if you're the Secretary of State National Security Advisor trying to beg your way back into the Iran nuclear deal as is without asking for any new concessions, you know, from Iran, or dealing with sunset provisions, you know, if that it's the standpoint of talking about foreign policy, you see it there. You might see it with regards to going in a different direction with the way the United States approaches Israel and the Palestinian Authority.
Great point.
Here closer to home with domestic agenda, whether it's legislation that's being advanced on, you know, the Green New Deal, or more of a Medicare for all, or expanding some other way, there's going to be instant clarity in the weeks ahead as to exactly why it is so incredibly important for all of us to be on our toes, and, you know, and not cower, not be silent, not sit back. Don't just let the Democrats pass whatever they want. We're going to have to hold them accountable and fight for what we believe in on the domestic front and on the foreign policy front. But the Dems are going to give us that clarity for anyone who needs it right away.
That's a great point. And the margins, I think a lot of Americans are used to a transition of power where the margins in the Senate and the House are much larger. They are razor thin in both places. So it is possible for Republicans to work with conservative Democrats and to get coalitions built to get certain things done, right? Your guys aren't powerless. It isn't like there's a 50-seat difference in the House or a 6-seat difference in the Senate. Does that help in some way? And are there those sort of coalitions and bridges being built right now?
100%. If you're trying to get to a majority vote in the House of Representatives and you only need 10 members to see the light of day on the Democratic side on a particular issue, regardless of whatever that calculation is, maybe it's an ideological one, it's philosophical, it's philosophical, it's thought out, it's principled, maybe it's a political calculation that they're making, whatever it is, it's not that hard. If at the end of the day, and we'll see what happens with the Brindisi-Tenney race, if you have 222 Democrats and 213 Republicans, or whatever that final tally ends up being when everything's all settled out. And by the way, that's even less when Cedric Richmond goes to the administration and Deborah Holland was appointed and Marsha Fudge was appointed. So then you'll need special elections. We're going to have an ability to better fight some of their worst ideas because the margins are as small as they are. You know, good luck getting the Green New Deal passed in the Senate, where Kamala Harris is, some tie-breaking vote, and you're relying on Joe Manchin of West Virginia in order to get your Green New Deal passed. Good luck, battling your war on coal, when the margin is that slim, and vice versa on other issues. So, I think it's going to be very hard for them to go at it alone. And we'll see what the Senate does as far as the rules that require 60 votes in order to move these bills across the finish line, see what kind of rules they may change. But, who knows? Maybe, Senator Schumer decides strategically that keeping the 60-vote threshold on something is helpful to him. It gives him an excuse, because if he changes it, then he's got to deliver the votes to actually get something done. He can actually sit back on a particular rule that's been around for several decades, but we'll have to see. Maybe it's different with regards to packing the court than it is on an appropriations bill. We just don't know yet.
I think a lot has to be sorted out in the next few weeks, and of course the two senators from Georgia aren't even sworn in yet, so there's two people calling themselves leader right now in the Senate, and that's understandable the way the dynamic is. But you're right, it'll fall into place, and then your strategy I guess gets more clear. When you look at the dynamic, there is an incredibly restless, vocal group on the left, personified by AOC and the Squad, that are expecting big things because they have all three chambers. But the truth of the matter is, they could become very upset and angry quickly that Biden and Schumer and Pelosi, because of the votes, can't deliver on much of that. How does that play into the Republicans' hands in terms of it may be that Joe Biden has to wear his breastplate backwards most days, right? Because the incoming fire may be more from behind him than even in front of him. Do Republicans see that dynamic lining up already?
There's a 100% chance of that. The Squad has outsized influence and power inside of their chamber, inside of their party. They absolutely have very real influence and power and ability to change trajectories on key items. With that being said, there are a whole lot of other members of the House of Representatives who are pissed off that that they would see the party being led by what they would view as the furthest fringe of the party. A new school trying to push out the old school, far left trying to push out any type of spirit of being moderate or bipartisanship. There are people on the right I've encountered. If you use the term bipartisan in front of them, they will flip out. They are triggered about it. And you would even contemplate the idea of even saying that word.
Compromise is a sin.
Yeah, you know what? That same thing exists on the left as well. And so you have a whole lot of members of the House who they're actually there to get stuff done. They ran for office because
they want to make a difference.
Yeah. But you know, that's a different approach than other members who you can't even say the word bipartisan, like it's a four-letter word.
It's unbelievable. You're right. I've watched it, and I'm hearing so many rumblings. I've got some good sources on the Democratic side, and that's what they're most scared about, that Biden, who you know, has a history of making deals in the Senate, and who, quite frankly, until this past election, was probably more of a mid-Atlantic centrist than he was a representative of the far left, is probably not ready for what's going to come behind his behind enemy lines. I mean, on his side of the equation, I think that's going to be the thing to watch early. When you look out right now, are there any priorities policy-wise that Republicans have, whether it's related to the pandemic, related to election law, related to the deficit, infrastructure? I know Republicans have tried for many years to get infrastructure to kind of improve our crumbling system. Where do you think Republicans will put some of their emphasis on, in the given that there's such slim margins, they can have an impact in pushing agenda items?
Yeah, now a lot of the agenda of what comes to the floor to get voted on, what a committee chair will be bringing up to move out to a floor, you know, what will come up in a address by a president in front of a joint session of Congress. There's a lot that is out of your control if you are, say, the minority in the House or the minority in the Senate, or you're not the party that's in the White House. It's just it's a different approach, different strategy. But like one of the examples, and you know, earlier on I was talking about foreign policy. I mentioned Iran nuclear deal. I mentioned a Green New Deal or expanding Obamacare. But you just mentioned election law. Now, with everything that got lost this week, is the reality that what we experienced in 2020 is that in battleground states, especially, that's where it had the biggest impact.
Right.
Non-state legislative actors were going around the set established state election law, and they were coming up with their own rules. It was an elections official at a county or state. It was a state secretary of state. It might have been a court.
Right. A commission in Wisconsin. An unelected commission was in Wisconsin. It's crazy.
And they never obtained the approvals from the state legislature, which is required under the Constitution.
Yeah.
So that issue is something that we absolutely must. That wasn't about January 6th. That wasn't just about November 3rd.
Right.
Or anything that has happened in between in the timeline. We have to lean into this issue. State legislators need to have a backbone and use the power that they have and don't just give it away to others. And then additionally, you know, one person reached out to me yesterday, like, well, you know, is it a time then to just, you know, federalize elections and be, you know, and then we can have voter ID and, you know, he's sharing these points. And I said that the issue is, like, if you look right now, especially at the alignment of power, is that if you are successful in getting elections to be nationalized right now, the way that it would get nationalized is not the way that you have in mind. The way it'll end up getting nationalized, we saw get passed twice by House Democrats in their quote-unquote Heroes Act of a nationwide legalization of ballot harvesting, a nationwide ban on voter ID. So we absolutely must lean into this issue. Don't get bullied by the left into not talking about election laws at all, because if you talk about election laws, if you talk about election integrity, then all of a sudden you are, you know, a traitor and a seditionist. Don't fall for that.
Yeah, no, the Constitution is clear. And it's funny, in five of the six states where most of the most magnanimous changes occurred, where the mobile ballot boxes came and where the essentially the mail harvesting, you know, for at least in quote marks, occurred, they were all Republican-led legislatures: Wisconsin, Michigan, Georgia, Arizona, Pennsylvania. Will your colleagues in Congress, could they go back and help these state legislators assert their authority, give them moral support, give them advice to try to get these rules back in line and get the rules of the next election back in line? Is that something that could happen, a coalition between the congressional Republicans and the state legislative Republicans?
It's essential. And you have to bring timely lawsuits, and you have to have standing, and you have to have your suits brought up. It has to be well written, and it has to be well defended by some great attorney or attorneys on your behalf,
right,
in courts. And it has to be done early. You can't even give the ability to a court after an election to claim that it was untimely, that you shouldn't be bringing this after the election. You should have brought it before the election. What we did experience in some cases, they said, this isn't yet ripe before the election. It's not yet ripe. And then after the election, they'll say, well, it's too late. But if you don't bring your issue up before the election, you're giving the court the excuse. Like,
not
we saw
to intervene.
Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I have a problem with Democracy in the Park event that took place in Wisconsin, over 17,000 ballots that got handed over that shouldn't have been. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court, in their 4-3 decision, where one, I think it was a Scott Walker appointed judge, went with the Democratic bloc on that one piece. They didn't rule on the merits because, we all know that on the merits what happened was wrong. The Wisconsin Supreme Court said that it was brought too late.
Exactly. Yep.
And if you see some county that is going around your established voter ID law and signature verification law, and then they get reprimanded by a judge and they're going to do it anyway, you don't just sit back. And even if you have your own race that's going on in your home state, if this is happening to you, this isn't about your own personal calculation to get reelected. It's so much bigger than you. It's bigger than the year. And this conversation that you and I are having at this moment, this isn't about Donald Trump.
Nope.
It's not about the 2020 election.
Nope.
It is so much bigger than that. It's about our republic.
Yeah.
And our state legislators, if they just want to keep handing over power, then some county elections official is going to do whatever the heck they want, knowing that the court system isn't going to do anything because it's either too early or too late. Some Secretary of State isn't going to do the right thing. And after the fact, in order to protect the legitimacy and trust in the process, you're not going to, at the end of the day, have all sorts of people in government, questioning the results. That's not the way that that's not what we're used to. This was new after the 2020 election.
That's right.
Where people were asking these particular questions, and it's uncomfortable, and some people just didn't want to have the talk. It all comes down to the state legislatures sticking up for themselves and using their constitutional powers.
Yeah, that's going to be such an important dynamic to watch. I just wrote a column on it, and I'm going to be monitoring it all through the year, because 2022 has to be a different type of election if Americans are going to trust their system going forward than the one that occurred in 2020. Last question for you, because I know you're busy and you got to get going, but Donald Trump has about 10 days, a little over a week, beyond keeping the temperature low and facilitating an orderly transition. Is there anything you'd like to see the president do in his final days, declassification, executive orders, outreach? What could the president do in these last 10 days to make a difference on behalf of his party, his followers, and the country?
Well, I would talk about all of the good stuff that has been accomplished and that he's working on. Don't wait for either the next administration or the media at large and all the presidential historians, everyone who's out there to just tell the story for you. And with that, certain items are done, and in the past, the victory has been achieved. And others, there might be ways through agencies, through acts of the White House, where you're able to continue to push your agenda publicly. But you know, as far as the overall strategy, you know, this is a moment in time where you don't want to be like, don't be like the end of the Obama administration, you know, where you're just trying to do, you know, absolutely everything in your power. Like, you know, Joe Biden right now would be sitting in the Oval Office talking about the Logan Act against Michael Flynn. You brought up declassification with regards to the Trump-Russia investigation and far more. Bring to light as much information as possible, because the next administration is not going to do that for you either. And that's a power that is going to get handed over when you get to a new inauguration for the presidency. So, yep. You know, from that standpoint, you know, that's a conversation to have with some of your agencies. I would also, you know, through, you know, the intelligence community, where appropriate, you don't have to give away sources and methods, but I think we need to, you know, learn more publicly, even more publicly, about the threat that's posed from China.
Yeah, great idea.
Don't wait for the handoff for the next administration, you know, to be shooting straight with full accountability, whether it's, you know, coronavirus or cyber or so much more. And it applies to other countries as well. And, you know, that you can make the most of every minute of every single day. Don't waste it. And don't lose an opportunity to talk about the progress that's been made. And that would be my reminder at the beginning of the day and the end of the day, is that there's a lot of good stuff to talk about, and even a few items that can make even more progress on. If you're upset about what has happened with the Trump-Russia collusion conspiracy and investigations, we'll bring more information to light. You're upset about what happened with the, you know, with the Hunter Biden case and the way they got buried. Maybe there's more to be said about, you know, big tech, or maybe there's an act that is appropriate that should be taken by the Justice Department. But and do everything based on the merits. And on everything we just discussed, they have a high road to own and to make progress on at the same time. This isn't like some Joe Biden random, you know, Logan Act reference on Michael Flynn. They can just rest on facts and merit-based arguments to make the most of these final days.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. It sounds like great advice. There's, as you said, every minute can still make a difference until the moment you hand over power. And it seems like there are some great opportunities, some documents that haven't been declassified. You're right. We don't know. We've been waiting for the post-election foreign interference report. They missed the deadline, obviously. There's a lot of things that could potentially occur next week that would be valuable. Congressman, I can't thank you much. We love having you on the show. Our listeners love you. And we want to wish you a happy new year and a happy start to the new congressional season. But thank you so much for what you do and for spending so much time with us today.
Of course. Thanks, John. Take care.
All right, folks, we're going to go to a commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to wrap things up for the day. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you, because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000, or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. Hey folks, if you're a homeowner and you're like me, you want to protect your home, right? But when's the last time you checked on the title to your home? If you never have, listen to this. A new report on homeowners shows we all now have $16 trillion in equity. That's an all-time high in America. That's why you need protection from a scam the FBI calls house stealing. That's when the equity in all of our homes is the target, sadly, of scammers. If nobody's watching the title to your home, these scammers can transfer your title to their name, take out loans, and your equity could be gone. Poof, gone. You have to protect your equity from this despicable crime right now with triple lock protection from my good friends at HomeTitleLock.com. The first step is to check on your home's title to see if it's still in your name. Sign up with your address at HomeTitleLock.com and be sure to use the promo code JUSTNEWS. They're going to send you a complete title scan of your home's title and your first 30 days of triple lock home title protection. That's legendary protection, by the way. It's free. HomeTitleLock.com. Use the promo code JUSTNEWS. One more time, go to HomeTitleLock.com today and protect your most important asset, the equity in your home. All right, folks, we're back for the day. Get ready to close things up. Pretty much wraps up our podcast today. A lot of food for thought from Congressman Zeldin. A lot of ideas on the table for how Republicans are going to engage, disengage on various issues, how they plan to play the role of the opposition, but also the role of opportunists when there are things that need to get done, like infrastructure. And I think the most important dynamic I heard from the congressman, and it's something I've heard from Democrats and Republicans alike at the present time, is that the biggest challenge Joe Biden is facing is not going to be from his Republican antagonists or the Republican opposition. It's likely to be behind his own lines when he turns around and the liberal wing of the party is frustrated that their wish list can't be executed because the margins in the U.S. government, particularly in the House and the Senate, are so small. There isn't bipartisan consensus to get certain wish items through because they don't represent the mainstream of America. That is going to be a dynamic worth watching. It's something I've been talking about on television, but it's very good when you hear someone on the front lines who understands the dynamic, is engaging and talking with their Democrats and their Republican colleagues to say the same thing. It's rather affirming. So keep an eye on that. I think it's going to be darn interesting. All right. Have a good evening with your family and friends and your loved ones. May God bless you. May God bless America. We'll be back on tomorrow, Tuesday, to bring you more news, more interviews, more insights, much to talk about in the days ahead. All right, folks, that wraps it up. Check us out at justthenews.com. And until then, we'll be back tomorrow. I'm John Solomon.
Hey there, it's Amanda Head, and I am thrilled to introduce to you my new exciting podcast, Furthermore with Amanda Head, broadcasting weekly from sunny Los Angeles, California, and brought to you by the dynamic Just the News Podcast Network. On this fresh and engaging podcast, I delve into the latest news with a little bit of a twist, exploring the furthermore of every story. But this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill news commentary or politically charged program. I interview a diverse range of guests, including business leaders, entertainers, musicians, educators, experts, politicians, and many influential figures from both the United States and around the world. So why not make your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a little more interesting? Tune in on your preferred podcast platform and discover Furthermore with Amanda Head on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and be sure to download the latest episodes. I can't wait to have you join me on this exciting journey.